Say that again.
Aware of pedometer.
Right, good evening everyone. It's 6 o'clock. Now before I start, I have to read the standard thing that to note that this meeting will be recorded and the recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. Please also note that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulation 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or vlog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. So moving ahead to item one on the agenda, which is apologies.
I've received apologies from Councillors Morgan, Tillotson, Funnelstone and Councillor Christine Harris. Are there anyone that I need to know?
Chair, not an apology for being here, obviously, but apology that I have to leave early, Chair. So my sincerest apologies for that. I have to leave after only 30, 35 minutes, so my apologies.
Moving to another notification, someone that has to leave early as well. Is that everyone? Okay, thanks for that. So if we move on to the minutes of the previous meeting. So I don't think there's any matters arising to begin with elsewhere, so it's just a matter of approving the minutes of the previous meeting.
Chair, can I just, I'm not sure if they are later on the agenda. At the last meeting there was two suggestions made, one about water stations and one about toilets being available, etc.
Yeah.
They weren't actually in the budget paper, so can I ask the officers, does that mean it's dead in the water now, or will the work be going on behind the scenes and this will come back at some stage, Chair?
Chris Trail, Strategic Director for Neighbourhoods and Community Wellbeing. I like your point, dead in the water. I'm sure it was intentional. I believe the water fountains will be incorporated as part of the work, which we did allude to at the meeting, that it might be potential to be incorporated without necessarily going through a budget process, because it's relatively a low cost alteration to an existing service. I think we were able to accommodate that already. The second one was about the charging.
About more availability of the more access to the loos over more time and possibly looking at making them free.
I don't think that was taken up as a...
Wasn't in the budget, no.
I don't think Cabinet agreed to take that forward. I'm not making an apology for that. I think that's just the process, how it works.
Thank you.
Any other comments on the minutes? Then these are
Agreed.
Then, so moving on to item three, which is disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary or personal interests? We've got the allotment. We're having a look. It's certainly an interest, but it's personal interest. But there we go. Thanks for that.
Pecuniary.
Maybe you have a fruit and veg stall in the market. Okay, moving on to item four, which is questions under committee procedure 12.8. Well, no questions were submitted. So we can move on to the substantive item of this evening, which is the open spaces, playing pitch and indoor built facilities strategies. So over to you, Matthew.
Thank you. Yes, Matt Bradford, Head of Cleansing and Open Spaces. I'll be mainly presenting the report this evening, and Sylvia Wright and Julie Robinson are here to assist with any questions that may arise, as well as is Chris Crane. So just give you an overview of the open spaces, playing pitch and indoor build facilities strategies, and what that means particularly for Loughborough tonight, and then there'll be a chance to ask any questions and hopefully we'll be able to answer those for you. So the Borough Council is currently preparing a local plan which will consider land use implications and set out a policy to guide future development. These strategies that we've developed set new standards for open space, sports and indoor sports provision and undertake an assessment of the current provision that we've got. The period covered by the three strategies is 2018 to 2036. And when the local plan is adopted, the strategies will run concurrently with that local plan and inform decisions on planning matters. But the strategies may be refreshed and updated periodically as we go through that local plan period. The Council has had an open spaces strategy previously that was adopted in 2013, and that was for the period 2013 to 2028. So this is one of those reviews that we've talked about. The strategy that was adopted recently replaced that one. We previously had assessments for playing pitches and indoor sports provision to understand the levels of current and future need. They've been now developed into individual strategies in their own right, although the previous open spaces strategy did contain some elements of outdoor sports provision. You'll see in the action plans that we've got appended to this report that there is a significant amount of finance attached to the strategies and the action plans. And the snippets that you've got within those appendices are just the Loughborough elements, so the full strategy goes beyond what you have presented here tonight. So it's anticipated that we won't provide all of the finance to meet the delivery of some of these actions. The figures have been identified, but we'd hope to get grants from external organisations or parish, well, there won't be any parish or town councils in the borough, but in other areas we have contributions from those organisations. Sports governing bodies and developers would provide contributions to meet the aspirations of the action plans that we've got in the document here. We have allocated a sum in the current capital plan. A sum of £500,000 was made available to support some of the actions identified in the playing pitch strategy, and we're still finalising exactly how that money will be spent, but that contribution will be used and hopefully we'll be able to secure some match funding to meet some of the aspirations that have been set out in the action plans. So any future funding that we would need, we need to secure through external funding, developer contributions, or the council's budget setting process. And this document, when it was adopted in January, didn't allocate any funding other than the £500,000 that we've already talked about that was previously set aside. So the strategies have been written following a baseline assessment of existing facilities within the borough. And the baseline assessments looked at the quantity, quality and accessibility of green spaces, sports pitches and indoor sports facilities. Each strategy subdivided the borough into sub-areas, and this allowed local accessibility to be determined. And ensures that a reasonable travel time is taken into account for people to reach facilities in their neighbourhood. The strategies also take into account that there are a wide spectrum of facilities providers throughout the borough, and that the council is not the sole provider of community infrastructure for green spaces, sports pitches, indoor and outdoor sports. Part of the assessment and the strategy development, community consultation took place with a wide range of stakeholders, so parish and town councils, educational establishments, sports clubs, Sport England and national governing bodies were represented on individual sports, and residents were invited to submit their own comments through surveys. Each of the strategies adopts a recognised methodology in its production, and that's understood nationally. So you'll see that the strategies that have been developed for Charnwood will have similar structure in the way that they've been determined to look ones in neighbouring boroughs and districts. We didn't append the whole of the strategies to this report tonight. The report in total about 1,200 pages, so we only picked out the relevant parts, but I have provided a link in the report if you want to look and delve deeper into each of those strategies to see what they say and how those assessments and recommendations were made. So I've just appended in Appendix A the Open Spaces Actions for Loughborough, Appendix B the Playing Pitch Actions for Loughborough, and Appendix C the Indoor Built Facilities Actions for Loughborough. So the open spaces part specifically, these are three separate strategies, if you like, that form a suite of documents. The baseline assessment took place during 2017 and looked at the following open space typologies. So there's parks and gardens, natural and semi-natural green space, amenity green space, green corridors, children's recreation facilities, young people's recreation facilities, allotments, churchyards and cemeteries, and civic spaces. The assessment determined the accessibility, quality and quantity of existing provision and set a planning standards for future provision going forward. So the playing pitch strategy, that was undertaken following Sport England's guidance, and it looked at the provision of the following sports pitches. So football, cricket, rugby, hockey, rugby league, tennis, golf, bowls, BMX, athletics and netball. And again, the assessment took into account the quantity, quality and accessibility. And assessments took place over summer and winter periods to account for different summer and winter sports throughout England playing field throughout the world. There are seven generic recommendations that are made in the playing pitch strategy as a whole, and they're contained at the top of page 13, point 17. And then just to mention on the playing pitch side of things as well, that we're currently working with the football facilities people and the FA to. They've got investment to make on a borough by borough basis, so we're currently working with the Football Foundation to bring some additional resource in to meet some of the aspirations that are made within the playing pitch strategy. Finally, the final strategy within the suite of documents was the indoor sports facilities strategy, and that was again undertaken using the guidance that's set down by Sport England. The scope of the assessment and strategy looks at sports halls for netball, badminton, basketball and volleyball, health and fitness centres, squash courts, swimming pools and indoor tennis. Again, point 25, there were a number of generic recommendations that were made to be applied across the borough, but the specific site-by-site or location-by-location location recommendations are contained within Appendix C of the document, and you can see those listed individually. I think that's probably all I'd like to say at this point. Just like to invite any questions that members may have on what we've just discussed or any particular actions within the action plan.
I have a comment, Mr. Chairman, and two or three questions. Can I do them all at once?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, on page 9, under report in financial implications, it says it is anticipated that funding for the projects identified in the action plans will be provided from a combination of external organisations including parish councils, sports governing bodies and developers. I'm a member of the parish council. I'm intrigued to know how much you think you're going to get from the parish councils because if it's 106, money that we're talking about, most parish councils want to see the 106 money going to provision for schools and for medical facilities, possibly the library. Anything left over might supply another bit of equipment on the infants' play area, but would hate you to think, Matthew, that we were going to. We have a lot of money in the bank.
The way that the Section 106 process worked is that we have to identify the needs of the community up front, and then speak to the developer about what that is, and that does have different elements that you've quite rightly pointed out. So we've got education, health, maybe some road infrastructure, we've got sports facilities, open spaces, and indoor sports as well, and all that gets put to the developer, and if the developer would be expected to meet the needs of all of those things as part of their proposal through Section 106 funding. So this is our evidence that we've got, these strategies, before we speak to developers to say, if you want to develop in this area, these are the needs that you're going to generate in this area, and this is what we expect you to fund. So this sets out the strategy for getting that funding to fund these things. I'm sure different organisations like health and the police and other people will have similar strategies that do the same thing. It doesn't rank them in any particular order. The developer would be expected to meet all of the needs arising from that development taking place.
Thank you. May I go on?
Certainly.
On page 15, well, it's not really on page 15, it's I come to the end of your excellent presentation, but one or two things occurred to me. We're talking about sports pictures. I would be encouraged to see, and I'm sure it's written in here somewhere, provision for older people to take part in sports. And I'm thinking particularly of walking football and walking netball. And my age group gets left behind. I don't want to, go on a 3-mile run every morning, but to do like walking netball. And so it's we need to think about providing those provisions as well.
I can comment on that. We are already providing walking football and walking netball.
Yes.
And the facilities that we have got within the strategies that are identified would allow for those activities to take place. But it's not just about being out and running.
Then perhaps that needs to be given more prominence in the overall strategy, so people do know that is, yes, I mean, it's provided up at Mount Sorrel, but we shouldn't forget that, older people have, sporting needs as well. That page 2. Matthew, you've been talking about open spaces, and I think I know what you mean by open spaces, but can I just clarify something? Are you talking about open spaces as defined by the Open Spaces Act of 1906?
We are. The different typologies that are covered within the report. I can't remember the exact definition of the Open Spaces Act 1906, but I can tell you that the types of open spaces that we're talking about are formal parks and gardens, natural and semi-natural green space, amenity green space, green corridors, children's recreation spaces, so play areas, young person's recreation spaces, so that'd be youth type facilities, allotments, churchyards and cemeteries, and civic spaces. So I think some of these typologies may fall outside of the definition in the Open Spaces Act. And the Open Spaces strategy isn't necessarily restricted to looking at those specific ones. So, for example, churchyards and cemeteries will probably fall out outside of the open spaces act.
They're a part of a different act.
But I need to check that to be sure, if I'm honest. And some civic spaces may fall outside of that as well. So it's not restricted to that, but it would include those spaces that are covered within the open spaces act.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Matthew.
I'm quite sure on this stuff, Councillor Parton.
Yeah, thank you. Looking at this playing pitch strategy, when you go through the list of, thinking of football, some of them are on non-council property, like for example Chelmer College, they've apparently got incorrect sized goals. And there's other areas where they all either say that there's provision or enhancement needed. Is there any area in Loughborough where there is a good quality football pitch with goals where a father or mother or parents could take a child, say, under 12 to shoot into a goal? Right now, you know, like say tomorrow, where could the parent go to say we'll take penalties?
Oh, I'll come back on that one.
We need the practice.
When the playing strategy assessment takes place, when we looked at that, particularly on football pitches, the assessment looks at the carrying capacity of each pitch. So the carrying capacity. How many formal games of football can that pitch have in a week? How many games can it sustain in 1 week? So a poor pitch, you might have one game a week. Yeah. An average would be two, and a good pitch would be able to carry three games of football a week. So it's looking at probably the formal organised sport side of the game. I would say that, particularly on council sites that we've got, so Derby Road, Lodge Farm and Lampanton, you could go for a kick around at any time and the goals would be sufficient and the grass would be mown to a sufficient level that would, you could have a good experience there. So I would say that the quality there is sufficient for that situation that you've described.
Yeah.
Councillor Parton, where a family want to go for a kick around. And there are alternative. There is alternative provision for that kind of informal sport through multi-use games areas and other things as well. In particular areas, which are probably more designed for that type of activity.
And what would be the likelihood of being able to install smaller goals on some of these areas for teams? For example, you see way back. 1997, a chap from the University of Nye set up a manual church football team, and the only places we could find to set it up, we had to go private. We went to Fairfield, and because they're the only place that would provide nets. Eventually, we did use Derby Road, but for various reasons, we couldn't use that because there was an aeroplane club. So we couldn't play football there, so we had to go back to Fairfield. So, but the point is can we look to does the Football Foundation recommend the installation of smaller goals? Because obviously, you know, an 8-year-old in a four-sized goal is on no chance.
The Football Association Football Foundation specify the size of goals and the size of pitches depending on the age group, and this whole playing pitch strategy takes that into consideration. Those goals on the whole are provided through a portable basis, and the Football Foundation and Football Association provide funding for clubs to be able to access those goals, which they store away and bring out for their matches and their training.
So there isn't anywhere in Loughborough now where a parent could take an 8-year-old to play football in a suitable size goal, where there's a permanent goal up there.
Because of the nature how pitches are provided, normally mini pitches are overlaid onto adult pitches, so they're multi-purpose pitches, and therefore all small-sided games and goals are provided on a portable basis and are provided on a site-by-site basis. And the strategy recognises that clubs and teams should pair appropriate sized pitches and says how many of those do you need, and should use appropriate sized goals, and recognises that there should be appropriate sized goals and there should be appropriate storage facilities to be able to store those goals on those sites. So that's what we'll be working with clubs to do, and that's what the Football Association do as well.
So could we set aside some of this funding to actually have a permanent pitch, a children's pitch installed with permanent goals put up? Just even if there's one in Loughborough.
Can I just interject, Councillor Barton? I'm a father to a 9-year-old. I wouldn't take him to a full-size pitch. I wouldn't even take him to a full-size pitch with a small goal. I'd just take him to the mugger that the council have provided. So there's several muggers in the borough, but in Loughborough there's one by Loughborough College that is ideal for youngsters. I mean, I think that's probably what we want to focus on, providing more of them rather than just the goals themselves. So I think that's it.
I would agree with that, yeah. But I would also say that I think it's important to actually have a full-size children's pitch as well, because we really struggled to find a pitch the right size. We had to basically make one with cones. And I noticed that Emmanuel, they practice now. They're probably the biggest children's football team in Loughborough now. I mean, I'm not involved, yeah. But they play up in on the college, 3G on Epinal Way. So you know, they don't play in the council. So could we look into that, please?
It's Matt Bradford, Head of Plenty of Urban Spaces. It's not a recommendation within the strategy itself, Councillor Parton. I think the focus will be on delivering the recommendations that have been made by Sport England and the FA with regard to their facilities. So I think it'd be hard to divert funding where there has been a recognised need to something where that hasn't been recognised as a need. As Judy Robinson pointed out earlier, I think culture and practice for children's football is to utilise, to overlay the pitch on outside pitches. So we'd be taking, if we've got a permanent children's pitch in one area, we may have to take an adult size pitch out of circulation to do that. So the space is quite tight. So
surely it would be good for children to have a pitch to play on, even if it was one in the whole of the town.
Well, I think for organised games, those pitches would be provided through the club, providing the posts and the facilities for those children's teams to play on an appropriately sized pitch. For recreational football and non-organised sports, I think we do have a couple of muggers, and children and families are always welcome to go for a kick around, if you like, on any of the recreation parks that we've got throughout the borough. But I think allocating a space specifically to one age group football would mean that we'd lose a lot of flexibility with other size football pitches that we need, really.
Okay, so final question then. So this is a full stop take of how many football pitches we've got in Loughborough at the moment.
The list that you've got in front of you, Councillor Parton, is a list of the specific recommendations for Loughborough. It isn't a full list of all the pitches that we've got. The full list of pitches that we have within Loughborough and the borough as a whole is contained within the whole strategy, and you'd have to look at that to get the full list.
Would you be able to send the link to that specific?
It's in the report.
If you like, Councillor Parton, I can email you the football section.
If you wouldn't mind, please. Yeah.
Tomorrow, if that helps.
Yeah, that'd be great. Oh, that one, right, yeah.
A big one. Council building up here. Councillor Harris?
Several points. I'd like to support the point made by Councillor Forrest about walking football, because I play normal five-a-side football and then stay on most weeks to play with the walking people as well. And I've noticed over the last year that they've started running. So that's exactly what you're trying to aim at, with your well-being and extra health. So some of those guys are survivors of heart attacks. Some of them are hugely overweight, and they've improved no end in a year. And they're almost morphing into normal football now, which is a great personal achievement for them. So maybe we could promote that a bit more. That takes place at the leisure centre, but there is almost always almost a total focus on kids and young people, which is also obviously important to stop them getting like the other guys in the first place. But the other end of the scale needs attention as well. I read somewhere in the report a reference to an artificial cricket wicket, and I wondered what the world was coming to. An artificial cricket wicket, which is always the same. Surely the main attraction of watching cricket is that it's not always the same, and it's weather conditional, and you can have completely different pitches favouring batsmen or bowlers according to the weather conditions or whatever. So I wouldn't have thought the average cricketer would want an artificial pitch, but also some of the artificial pitches I've seen for football. I take my granddaughter to football practice in Mount Sorrel, and the pitch is so fast that the activity that they most spend time doing is throwing, because the ball's flying all over the place. So I'm not entirely sure that some of the artificial surfaces are appropriate for the game. Balls just touch the ball and it seems to sort of disappear. So that was my first point about that.
So I'll answer that. English Cricket Board have got a policy around grass and non-turf pitches, as they call them. Their recommendations for juniors is around the use of non-turf pitches, and they are specialist cricket non-turf pitch strips. And for training purposes, they are recommending non-turf pitches, so they are cricket specific. And we're not proposing to take away grass wickets, but to subsequent them for training with non-turf pitches.
Okay, thank you. And I saw also the term allotment obsolescence. How does that come about? Is that because the soil is no use anymore, or what does that? How does that come about?
Sure. Where that's mentioned, Councillor Harris didn't go on.
I think it's on about page 37. I think. Laptop's going to sleep.
And the creeping obsolescence of existing allotment facilities.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Was that? I think it relates to the ancillary facilities on each allotment site. So, maybe water facilities to get rid of rubbish, that sort of thing.
Not the land itself. And one final point, you mentioned improving signage in nature reserves or whatever. And residents of mine have been trying to get appropriate signage in Stoneboat Washlands for some time. It seems to be taking a long time. So I think this new strategy will get that done a bit more quickly.
Well, it is identified as an action within the open spaces strategy to have a signage policy, if you like, to draw down the funding so that we've got that consistency across the borough as a whole to improve the on the interpretation or signage that we've got on a side-by-side basis. So I would hope so that is set out within the document.
So that, the fact that it's not adequate at the moment, you haven't had the funding, so the funding will make that possible.
Yes, I think the document here recognises that there is a sort of deficit with regard to signage and some consistency and provision of signage, and we're hoping to improve that as part of the open spaces strategy, so that isn't a problem at some point in the future.
Yeah, thank you, because my residents are getting increasingly aggressive and threatening to take the council to court. So.
Okay.
Thanks for that. Mindful that Councillor Parsons and Bradshaw have to leave early, can I take a question from
Yes, very briefly. We have the university sits right in the middle of our town, which is a huge facility for open space pitches, demand, need, etc., where we have large amounts of community bleed in and out to utilise those facilities. I presume they're going to be taken into account or are already taken into account with the audits of need. And also, is there now our only formal engagement with them through the planning process? Because we obviously have specific issues in the wards that border the university, and issues based around need versus planning issues will become relevant. So I just want to make sure that the university is taken into account here. Need is measured, university need, and we understand the community bleed in and out of the university boundary.
When we looked at the playing pitch strategy, we looked at the level of community access to the university's facilities, so the amount of time each week that was available for members of the public, general public, to book and use. So yes, it does take into account all of those facilities, but only the community use time and not the time that the university book out for their own requirements, if you like.
So that leaves our only formal engagement with the university through the planning process with regard to facilities expansion there.
I think we have links with the university to that look at the use of sports provision through Julie Robinson's team. And that's ongoing, not just through the planning process, but the strategy looked at that particular point in time at what was available for members of the general public to use and utilise.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Thank you, sorry Chair, thank you.
Councillor Bradshaw.
Thank you. Councillor Bradshaw speaking. First of all, Matt, thanks for the report. Very pleased to see that Gandy Green's obviously in there. And can't wait, as can some of the residents, the earliest opportunity. So we're looking forward to the earliest opportunity. So that's just one comment. So thank you. Just going back to the indoor built facilities action plan on page 43, which you said was guided by Sport England. A couple of things on the sports hall and swimming pools. It said about replacement of aging facilities. I just wondered what facilities it mentioned, like Loughborough Leisure Centre, which not long ago was actually on. I think it was when Councillor Forrest was mayor, wasn't it, when he came to open it? It doesn't seem 2 minutes ago. I just wondered what facilities were planned to be redone, if that makes sense.
I think you're talking, as it said, it's long term. Right. This is basically looking at things like up to 2036.
Okay.
So it's recognising that that our facilities, especially Loughborough at the moment, it's had a lot of capital investment. It's in very good condition at the moment, and that was evidenced in the report. But moving forward, obviously, in order to get the best results and to get the best use of our facilities, they recognise the needs that they will continue need to be refurbished and being replaced. Yeah. In terms of swimming facilities, the need was there, was a priority of a learning pool that Saw Valley was recognised, so it's not actually in Loughborough, that's where the need was recognised, actually at Saw Valley. But it is about making sure that as we move forward, we continue to look at keeping them up to good condition.
Okay, we could perhaps have, we were talking about walking football, something like for old people to do in the swimming pool. Is that something that's happening at the moment?
In terms of kind of operational things, obviously the Fusion do a wide range of programmes aimed at a wide demographic, and we meet with them on a monthly basis and to kind of examine their figures and participation at all different levels, whether it be for people with disabilities or for people over 60 or over 50. You know, we can drill down into their participation levels, and we can talk about different programs that they're running and how successful they are. So we get a great deal of feedback on the contract on a monthly basis, and then have a very in-depth report on a quarterly basis. And basically, since the 7.5 years since the contract has been in place, we can look at trends as well. So we're not just kind of looking at what's there, we're looking at actually how things have developed or what the trends are. Things like swimming, the swim school has grown enormously, so it's interesting to be able to see through all the records of where we are increasing the demographic or where we're increasing an activity.
Councillor Smidovich.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Two questions. One relates, picking up a little bit where my colleague had started to speak. I was looking at paragraph 11 on page 12 in on the computer. I don't know if it's the same as on the paper examples, but it's mentioning about this has been adopted through the new open spaces strategy, and then it goes on to say the new standards are based upon the fields in trust standards that are widely used in assessments. So it's the first time I've ever heard of that. So, but my question is, if you are sort of preparing a pitch, whether it's hockey or football or anything like that, do you take into account the proximity to private housing and the noise? Do we sort of take that as a measurement, and would it be on there?
Well, I can come back on that, Chair. The fields in trust standards apply specifically to open spaces,
right.
Not playing pitches. They're a different standard. The playing pitch standard looks at the Sport England playing pitch guidance. I think the proximity to housing for sports facilities would be considered as part of the planning process,
yeah.
And that would be taken into account there, obviously. We've got a number of existing sites that are there, and that situation is as it stands at the moment. But I guess any new sites that are developed where sports facilities are provided as part of a new development or off-site as a part of a new development, that would be considered through the planning system.
So where would planning go to get that information on proximity? Is it sort of finger in the air, or is there a set sports body that
the proximity will be as part of the plan submitted for that particular development,
right.
So they would have to consider as part of the planning process whether the estate design was appropriate for what they were after. There isn't anywhere within the Sport England guidance that says a hockey pitch or a football pitch needs to be a certain distance away from housing.
Right, that's what I was wondering, basically. I thought it was going to be more simple than that. My second question is there provision to purchase from a trust a piece of land to protect and enhance a particular area? So if there is a piece of land that you know is available.
Yes. Can I just answer? Karen Widdowson, Democratic Services.
Yeah.
I'd like to come in at this point because the meeting has now become inquorate.
Right.
We have to have a quorum of 11. However, as this is a non-decision-making body, the meeting can continue, and I will reflect that in the minutes, that the meeting continues and that the views represented around this table now are the views of the members present and not as a fully quorate meeting. So, as long as the chairman is in agreement with that.
Yeah, yes, so as long as it's recorded in the minutes, we're going to record, but we will still record comments, and that will be minutes.
Yeah, that's fine.
Sorry,
that's
to interrupt
that. That was fine, thank you. So it was really, because in certain places green space is so limited, and you know, we constantly worry about how many more houses are going to get thrown in there. There are areas that are totally, really inappropriate. So the question is, when there's been something or a piece of land that you think this is really would be attractive and it would enhance an area, whether there would be provision to purchase it, if an area or if a trust knows that it's unlikely they're going to get approval to actually build on a piece of land, is there provision in the council's reserves to actually say, well, we would take that off you to enhance a particular area, if that makes sense.
If I could answer that, Chair, there isn't any provision within the Council's current capital plan to do that, and any decision regarding that type of matter would be subject to an amendment to the existing capital plan that would be made through right. Cabinet, but it doesn't exist.
No, okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Did Councillor Draycott have a question?
Yes, Chair. Two matters, if I may, Councillor Draycott. First, following on from the comments to do with the university, I've always found it disappointing that the very small amount that the public can have access to state-of-the-art sports facilities that the university is so proud of. And I know when I was a former councillor on the Ashby estate, there was a great need on that area, particularly for those children to actually have such access. And they couldn't, they weren't even allowed on the ground or what have you. And I really think as a council, we should be doing a lot more to pressure the university to actually make those facilities more widely available. You know, there's open areas, there's open pitches. Wouldn't take a lot to arrange, you know, the light touch. You know, I'm not talking about necessarily the swimming pool, but maybe there could be a session a bit more. I do think the university could be doing a lot more on that front. The other thing, Matt, you mentioned obviously this is for Loughborough and that's what you target it at. I just wonder about the Garendon development, which is technically Shepshed, but it's on this side of the M1. And I actually feel that most people who eventually will live there will associate to being part of Loughborough. Is there a section on the Garendon development in that huge document that you referred to?
Yes.
Because that's great, because then I'll go in and have a look at that separately. Thank you. Yeah.
Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to explain, coming back to what Councillor Smidovitz said about protecting certain areas of land, and I was going to explain the Open Spaces Act 1906 to her, but I can do that anytime.
Thank you, Councillor Forrest. I look forward to that conversation.
It's riveting.
I thought it might.
Just cost Barrow Parish Council a huge sum of money, so I know all about it.
Oh, great.
Please, yeah. The on page 34, 8.9.4, it says Haddon Dishley outward Shelthorpe. Could that be amended to Southfield instead of Shelthorpe? Please, because it pertains to Park Road Sports Ground. So moving to the actual specific question, it says Park Road Sports Ground, installation of new floodlighting to two community courts. Could you provide, I'm not asking for the full, but would you be able to provide Councillor Paul Mercer and myself the justification for having floodlighting to these courts? I've done some research and a brief look on Google, and nearly all of the floodlit courts are in park areas. Like, for example, in Leicester, it's Friends of Victoria Park. Warwick, it's in a park. And there's quite a few in London as well that are all in parks. This is so close to a residential area. Could you be able to send us the justification why you think that's necessary? And also, do we have the evidence to say that footfall into these courts when the light is lower in the evening, for example October to February, would justify the need for floodlights when you'd be able to play till 8 or 9 o'clock in July without the need for lighting?
If I could come back as well, Councillor Parton, on page 42 on the plain pitch strategy, it does actually say to provide 6 floodlit all weather courts as well. I think that's the expectation of
Sport England. There is some justification in making that recommendation, okay, contained within the playing pitch strategy. I thought I'd email that to you, Councillor Barton, so you may already have that, but I'm quite happy to provide that. The justification really is to extend the playing time that's available on those courts into the evening during the winter months, so it becomes less of a seasonal facility, more of a year-round one. I have actually provided floodlit courts in residential areas in other places that I've worked, and we've managed to manage that quite well with residents by putting timers on that shut the lights off at a specific time in the evening, so they're not going in late into the night, and they are provided on a pay-as-you-use basis, so they're not on permanently. They don't get switched on at 6 o'clock and left on till 9 at night. If someone makes a booking or a payment or provides a token in a meter, the lights come on for half an hour. Once that time has been used, they either make another payment to extend the time or they leave. So I can provide that justification from the strategy.
Yeah.
But it is simply to extend the usable time of those courts in that area.
Okay, and will you be able, this will go as a planning application, won't it?
It would, all floodlighting applications will be subject to the relevant planning permission.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Councillor Meehan.
Cheers, thank you. Just nice listening to this debate, because obviously we've got this policy in front of us and we're not making a decision on what should go in and out on the policy, it's just how it should be implemented in Loughborough, and it's quite good actually. I want to praise the officers actually for Southfield Park. It's a park that I've known since I was about 4 years old. It's good to have a skate park because we do have antisocial behaviour around centre, around the area, in each other's wards. I wouldn't say it congregates this antisocial behaviour, it congregates the kids in one area, so they're less prone to cause issues elsewhere. And it's good to have the extension of the skate park. But I do want to touch on what Councillor Parton says, and I think we could utilise that park a little bit more. It's not in my ward, it's in their ward, and they should have final say. But I think the mother in there, or some type of footballing facility or basketball facility, multi-use facility, wouldn't go amiss. In that we've provided them elsewhere. Loughborough Community and Loughborough College is one that we use Ranmore Road. And we've got some in Copping School who open the gates for us and let the children use it at any time. But one at Southfield Park, I think, would make that use more useful. But that's if that's in your plan.
Yeah. Just saying, Councillor Mayor, we are in conversation with the Football Foundation at the moment, and we are making some recommendations to them about citing more recreational football facilities rather than the structured games, so it'll be like luggers or hardware and artificial turf pitches, and there are some recommendations that we've made around Southfield and that vicinity, so it's not finalised yet, but we are in discussions with people to hopefully provide facilities like that now.
Okay, Councillor Smith, did you have something?
Yes, please. Like Councillor Smith, like Councillor Drake, I'm concerned about Garrison Park, and in particular the green open space that is and will remain as Garrison Park. Have we somewhere got our aspirations for opening Garrison Park to be adjoined to the residents?
Sorry, could you repeat that question?
Garrison Park,
yes.
Which is a green open space, it's not the building site.
Yes.
Have we somewhere got aspirations for opening that up for the residents to enjoy, if only just use the existing footpaths?
Yes.
In the planning application, there was, yes.
Yes.
But it's technically it's Shepshed, not Loughborough, which is why it's not
actually
here.
I think St Garendon Ward.
No, it's Shepshed land. It's technically Shepshed.
I think
we could have changed it.
I think regardless of where it is, there is provision to open it up and give a lot more public access than
there is. Where can we see that?
It's in the core strategy.
So yeah, in the core strategy.
I'm just surprised it wasn't in here.
It's because that is in the Shepshed Haven sub area,
yeah,
and not in Loughborough.
Yeah, this is just Loughborough,
but it is in the strategy.
All 1006.
Yeah,
thank you.
So
glad
that
can
come.
Did you not like it?
Thanks for that. Councillor Patton, did you want to come back with something a little bit sure?
No, it was to say that in the notes there was mention of a provision of £50,000 for multi-use games.
Yes, just one last question, just an update really. the burial provision at Nampanton, are we moving?
That's in there.
Is it dead in the water?
No.
Well, if it was, there's a major disease on the road.
Just if I can give an update, give an update to the next committee meeting as well, more structural, if you like. Yes, obviously, Cabinet did approve the location of the new cemetery to be the site near the sports ground, at the back of the sports ground. We are conducting studies at the moment on that land that will inform a planning application being made over the summer, and we have been in conversation with the Environment Agency regarding the suitability of that land. So the project is moving forward. There isn't any work that you can see on the ground, but there is quite a lot of background information that's needed to submit for planning, and that is taking place at the moment. As I say, we hope to be in for planning approval, fingers crossed, over the summer. But I'm quite happy to do a separate paper on that.
No, I think I'm just curious, that's all. Thank you.
It's not over the hill there.
Thank you. Yeah, just like to ask about the wildlife sites. I mean, it's mentioned here about improving access, new footpath seating, sort of thing. But what about actual helping the wildlife? Is there any money spent to creating habitats or putting bird boxes up or sand martin banks like we used to have at Dishley? That seems to be sort of forgotten about. You know, is there anything else for actual wildlife sort of thing?
Certainly, Council. We are in the process of declaring more and more local nature reserves as we go. We've got a number throughout the borough now, and each one of those sites will have a specific management plan attached to it as part of that local nature reserve designation. So any wildlife needs will be met on a site-by-site basis through that management plan going forward. So even though it's not maybe obvious within the open spaces action plan, each of those management plans will consider the needs of our sites going forward.
It's nice that people are allowed in, but some wildlife, there's a lot of people and dogs, you know, just like to mention that.
I think Council's right, it's a fine balancing act on some of these sites, and we need to provide public access, but
we've got the right on the team.
Maybe some parts of the site don't need any public access, and that's to provide more excluded areas for the wildlife.
That
would be
part of the management plan. Yeah. Thank you. So, any other questions? I've got a rather boring process question. Okay. Appendix A, you've got a really good detailed action plan, but not all actions have got targets against them. So the question is, how do you know how the action has been done or performed? How do you measure it if there's no target?
We monitor this is the open spaces strategy action plan in particular. We monitor this through our particular team plan. Some of the fire level actions, if you like, make it into future corporate plans and things like that. But we'll continue to monitor this. I think the ones without specific targets are probably the ones that are harder to measure, so it's very difficult. Sometimes
smart targets not always easy.
Yeah, sometimes it's not a numbers game really. It's how people feel and whether you think that you've completed that particular thing. And I guess that's why we've struggled to attach a particular target for it. But we've been monitoring this very carefully going forward. And the old open spaces strategy was actually scrutinised through the council's performance process. So, I'm sure that will happen going forward as well.
Okay, thank you. Are there any further questions on this item? In which case, thank you very much for that. That's been a very useful discussion.
Thank you,
Madam. Yes, so we're moving on to now item six, which is meeting dates.
So Karen Middleton, just very briefly, at council next week, you'll see a list of dates for future committees going through until December 2020. And you'll be pleased to hear that in the scheduling of the meetings, we have scheduled and changed the January budget meeting to December, so the time is very nicely with the cabinet meeting so that there can be more input. And in terms of future items, clearly there may be some ideas from this particular meeting tonight, but they will be picked up as part after the elections, as part of a future work programme. Thank you.
Thank you very much.